Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. During each episode, we're diving headfirst into conversations with some of the most incredible RevOps leaders out there. Not CEOs, not big flashy executives, not vendors. We're talking to the people who are actually doing the work, the ones leading teams, the ones in the trenches, grinding it out every single day. We're taking things up a notch, getting deeper, having more fun, and as always, keeping it real. Remember our theme, RevOps Unboxed, and today we're unboxing it all. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. I'm so excited because I'm here today with Tyler Hooper, who I've seen speak. He is a RevOps extraordinaire, and he's recently joined FIS to really help them with all things revenue operations. Thank you so much for joining me today, Tyler. Appreciate having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sandy. It's an honor. I've also watched you present, and I feel like I'm in the presence of revenue operations greatness. So thank you so much for having me on your show.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about your background. How'd you get into revenue operations, and tell us your story?
Yeah. So, you know, it's not one of those things that going to school, you know, that revenue operations is what you want to do when you grow up, but I kind of found my way into it, and I found a love for it over the last little while. So I've now been working for Silicon Valley revenue operations teams for the last about 15 years. And it's been four multi-billion dollar companies, Cisco, PayPal, Pure Storage, now FIS. And so I've gathered kind of a unique perspective from very large companies. And, you know, oftentimes you think of a large company and you think, well, they've got to have everything documented and everything's working smoothly. If they're that big, of course they do. And what I've learned is they need as much help as anyone else. They just have bigger problems, a bigger team, bigger problems. And so it's been a lot of fun, I'd say, being able to push both the revenue side, get creative around how do we bring revenue in, and continue to focus on the cost efficiencies. That's why I love revenue ops. I actually came from supply chain, thought that was going to be what I did, and we only focused on the cost side. And so flipping over, I met somebody on the operations, the RevOps side at Cisco, and really never looked back. So that's maybe my last 15 years or so in the revenue operations world.
I love it. And I love how you say fun, because there's something sick and twisted about all of us in revenue operations that make it fun, right? Like when we see these problems, we want to fix them, and we can kind of like, I always tell people, I see it like the Matrix. Like I can see what is wrong with your company, what's happening. So, and tell me a little bit about that. So I talk to a lot of folks from startups, and I've been in both situations, right? So I've worked for large public companies, big bureaucracy, lots of systems, lots of change, lots of reorganizations, acquisitions, and stuff like that. And I've been on the startup side, right? So they're both very different experiences, a lot of the same skill set, but maybe can you give me a little bit more about your experience in kind of seeing this stuff and untangling things?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I come into a new role, I can see what was created by the person that was starting it up. And there's a beauty in the quickness, in the agility of a system that's been set up, the way that it has in a smaller organization with less red tape and less process documentation, maybe some manual processes that are just outside of the main CRM or whatnot. And I can see why that was, but then I can also see what needs to change in order for the company to, sometimes you have legal and compliance issues that become bigger as you become a bigger company, or there's just more people involved. You think revenue operations across marketing, sales, and customer service, if you want the three of them to work well together, the processes need to be documented at some point. Mm-hmm. Roles and responsibilities need to be made clear. Data governance and data storage and how people get to that needs to be made clear. And those are all things that I typically find when it comes from a startup are not necessarily in the shape that they need to be in or built for scale.
I love how you point out like roles and responsibilities, like a basic RACI chart. I can remember it was earlier on in an earlier sales ops role, and I had a leader and she sat us all down in a room and she's like, who is responsible? Who owns this? Who owns that? And it was just, you know, putting that big A on somebody's head, not the other A, but the A for accountable in the process is so important.
It is. Yeah. And I find in smaller companies that gets a little bit blurry. Everybody's just trying to get the revenue in. Everybody's trying to pitch in and help out, which is all really, you know, really great. But at some point, you know, your company gets big enough and there are some lines that need to be drawn and some clarity that needs to be made in order for teams to really operate well together, not be wasting productivity as they're both trying to do the same thing, or even maybe doing, you know, projects that aren't necessarily supporting each other. And that sometimes happens in larger companies if those roles aren't clear.
Right. And then somebody like you comes in and you kind of, a lot of people don't even realize it too. They're like, oh, we didn't know you did that. And revenue operations kind of sits in the middle there, right? And has to be that collaborator. So how do you approach that in a large company?
Good question. I'd say one of the first things that I try to do is understand what is the work that's being done. So, what are the initiatives? What are the roles? Every company is structured a little bit differently. For example, just coming into a new company and the analytics team rolls up through a different office than the CRO. In my last company, it rolled up through the CRO. So understanding who are the different players and then the body of work, for example, now it's planning season. And so a lot of companies are just really plowing through planning. And I find that things can get kind of messy with who is doing what around planning. So for me, I like to interview the different teams, understand who thinks that they're doing what, and then I take a step back and put some clarity to that and say, okay, here's what I heard. Typically in a matrix environment, I'll take a planning process and say, here are the big blocks in a swim lane. Here's who I think is doing what. And simply sharing that with people, it's easier when you're the new guy playing the new card and saying, hey, here's what I noticed. You're doing this and you're also doing this. And who is doing that? And really bringing clarity. You don't need to be the new guy to do that. But it just takes a level of rigor. And like you said, you can come into environment and just kind of see. Your gut tells you sometimes, oh, these two people are doing the same thing, or there's, you know, overlap, or even a little bit of friction. Sometimes you'll sense a little bit of friction coming from a certain area. And those are areas that I tend to dig into to understand where that friction is coming from. And you'll typically uncover a role and responsibility mismatch very quickly in those situations.
Yeah, it's definitely the job of being a collaborator, right? Being a good collaborator, having to have those conversations. Sometimes they're difficult, right? Sometimes you uncover friction in those conversations. And I'm guessing you uncover opinions about the CRM. I know that's something that you're passionate about and wanted to talk a little bit about today. So what are your thoughts on just really the value of having a good, solid foundational CRM?
Yeah, I am passionate about the CRM. And the reason why this is top of mind for me right now, I'm going into yet another multi-billion-dollar company in tech. And yet again, CRM is a conversation. And it just surprises me that, you know, this goes back to our conversation about small companies versus larger companies. You build things, you customize, you get excited about this new capability that you have, and you start to add things in there. And it's not necessarily thinking long-term, thinking for scale. A lot of extra fields get added in. The data, it gets duplicated when you purchase another contact list, and it's not necessarily scrubbed with the original contact list. Same with accounts. You get all this tech debt and data debt in there, and it leads to process debt and an inability to connect systems across marketing, sales, and customer success. And that really breaks down the revenue operations model. If you don't have the connections of the data, the technology, the people, and the processes, you're never going to have that full customer view and customer life cycle focus. So coming into another company where CRM is part of the conversation, I think of it as kind of the heartbeat of the revenue operations model. And I was at the revenue operations summit and presenting on the Parthenon model. And basically that Parthenon model is for revenue operations, it's starting with roles and responsibilities in that bottom layer, the bedrock foundation that the Parthenon, the Greek temple visual, if you'll recall, is built on top of that foundation of strong roles and responsibilities, and having revenue operations kind of understood and the philosophy bought into by an organization. On top of that, you have the core functions that you have to get right in an organization, being comp and planning, business insights, deal support, forecast and pipeline, and then your process, your sales process, and the technology steps. And the heartbeat of this revenue ops Parthenon is the CRM. If you do not have quality CRM and a good, strong CRM in place, you will not be able to perform those core functions the way that you need to in order to work your way up into the pillars of the Parthenon, which are the more strategic elements of revenue operations. So the, you know, helping with QBR board decks, being part of productivity conversations with the sales team, being part of the annual sales strategy conversations, driving big operational excellence programs, things like that, that rely on you having a really strong relationship with your business partners. If you don't have a good, strong CRM behind all of that as the heartbeat of revenue operations, you can't be successful in those lower levels, and you won't be able to earn your seat at the table to be in those strategy conversations where revenue operations can really provide a tremendous amount of value to the go-to-market organization as a whole.
Yeah, I second that. I mean, it is critical to getting the right data and to telling your story and to building the strategy. So I think having that foundation, without that, it's hard to bring insightful information to get yourself a strategic seat at the table. And so I just like how you frame that, because I think revenue operations leaders sometimes are challenged to be thought of as a strategic partner, and more like, hey, they're the CRM admin. So how do you balance that? If, like, we know the CRM is so important to get it right, but how do you balance that and not get put in that bucket of like, oh, you know, they're just going to do the CRM, they're my pipeline person, they're going to provide me the decks, the board deck person, you know, whatever. How do you balance that? Because you have to focus on the CRM, but how do you position yourself that way in the company?
Great question. And what I've seen is when your CRM is already in the state with all the technical and the data debt, and there's manual processes or things that break, you do become that Salesforce admin team, because that's what you're spending your time on. And you never get to the point where you're able to leverage the underlying data to bring insights to the organization. It's when you're able to understand the business. You do have to understand the business itself. I do find too many people in revenue operations think, oh, I'm an ops person, I'm in the background, I don't need to understand the business, be involved with the sales team. And that's putting yourself a bit, I think, behind the curtain there, and not being asked to get into those strategy conversations. But if you do understand the business, in revenue operations, you have a very unique view of the business if you take it. And so if your CRM's in a place where you can actually pull together those insights, you can trust the data, you have data governance, you have ways of visualizing the data in interesting ways, then you can actually bring that to your sales team proactively and help them understand that, you know, maybe let me show you a report here. Let me show you what this means to me. And I think we have an opportunity here to, you know, X, Y, Z. So that's when I've seen people turn the corner. Yes, your CRM has to be out of purgatory in order for you to actually to bring those insights to the table and get that strategic seat.
I think everybody listening, listen to Tyler here. Know the business. Know the business. You can't take a back seat and just work on the business. You have to really understand and work in the business. And I get it. Like, not everybody grew up into revenue operations at their company and like started as a SDR and then went to sales, then went to sales leader, and then went over into enablement or ops or whatever. That doesn't happen that often, right? Maybe 10% of us kind of have that path. So if you are in a role that you didn't work in the business, you need to freaking know the business, like understand the metrics, understand the customer, right? So everything that you're doing in the CRM is about the customer. And so I think what you're saying is so important. People listening just have to know your business. And if you don't skate around like, you know, you don't need to know the business. If you ever want to be part of the strategy, you have to bring those insights and know the business. So I think just pointing that out, I think is so important for people listening. Even if you're new, you're new to RevOps in general, new to the company, like, it's a great opportunity to learn the business. Listen to the calls. Physically freaking go out on sales calls. Like, get out there. Yeah. Go talk to customers.
Yeah, raise your hand. And that's one of the best ways to really understand the business is being in some of those customer calls. I think that's an excellent recommendation.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think in revenue operations, I don't think you have to have industry experience to jump into a job, but you have to know what you don't know, right? And you need to be able to soak it up and learn it. And, you know, a lot of people learn by reading, but like me, I got to just get in it and like understand the customer and sit with them and those kind of things.
Yeah.
You said something about like, you know, when you kind of get the CRM and you're meeting with different people and collaborating stuff, like, what have you found in terms of like messy integrations, ugly stuff, disconnections? I like to think of it as Frankenstack. Like, do you have any things that maybe you want to tell us about?
Yeah. So everybody's unique. Everybody thinks that they're a snowflake and that their business is unique, right? So every company I've gone to, they've taken a standard CRM and they've customized it to try to make it do everything that your business does. And your business model is different and each of your different, you know, cost structures and approval processes and things like that. At one point, one of the companies I was working with, they had, I think, 95% of the custom code allotted to them was used up at Salesforce. So we actually were telling people no, not because we didn't want to make our instance messier, but because we could not add any additional custom code. So when our business model did change and we moved to more ACV, more of a recurring revenue stream, we actually had to go back to the drawing board and rebuild from the ground up our CRM instance. And so we could have avoided all of that by saying no to some of the custom code that came in. We also, you know, need to say no more often to sales leaders or other business partners. Well-intentioned, but they often raise their hand and say, hey, could you put this field in your CRM? I want the rep to tell me this or tell me that or flag this or flag that. And while they're useful, and I understand why they're asking for that, the CRM and putting another gate in the sales rep's sales process to potentially slow it down is not the solution. There are other ways of getting that information, whether it's surveys, whether it's, you know, one-offs, maybe there's some other business process or workflow needs to be set up outside of the CRM, as opposed to adding a new field for every question, adding a customization for every integration. That just, you know, it's not sustainable. It's, you could do that at small scale in small companies. As soon as you get, you know, beyond a certain threshold, you're going to have to go back to the drawing board and rethink your CRM implementation.
So what's the worst you've seen in terms of an opportunity record, the amount of fields on it?
I think we had, I want to say 375 is the number that's coming to mind. And the good thing is, you know, we realized it was a problem. And 375 fields. I know we got it down to under 100. I want to say it was in the 60s by the time we were done with it, which was, huge. It was a huge undertaking.
Dude, you win. So I thought, I asked someone the other day, like I like to ask this question, and they were like 175, and recent experience was 266 down to 66. So you've got me beat. You're holding the record right now at 375.
I don't know if that's something I should be proud of.
Hey, you fixed it, right?
We did.
Like, and it gets out of control quickly. And then, you know, sales managers get pissed off. Well, I want to put this field in. It's like, there may be, like, I like to ask, like, what problem are you trying to solve? Right? Yeah. Like, there may be, like you said, there may be some sort of automation we can put in. There may be something we can run in the background, or something we can do like in a different format later, rather than make someone check a box every time they pull the thing up. And then you've got 300 and something fields and you're like, well, what do we do? Like, you know, you can't blame the salesperson for never using the CRM,
exactly.
Right?
We don't make it easy for them sometimes.
That's so funny. So think, you know, maybe talk a little bit about this idea of a management operating system. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, you know, one piece of revenue operations is understanding the philosophy. It's the Parthenon model I talked about. It's getting your CRM correct. There's another aspect of a successful revenue operations team that I have seen quite a bit of this in different kind of stages of maturity, but it's what I call a management operating system. And what that means is, you effectively codify the rhythm of business in a way that you don't need any particular leader to be in place for the system to run. And I've seen this in multiple revenue operations teams where, again, well-intentioned, they'll put a lunch and learn on the calendar every once in a while when they think of it. They'll have to move a QBR around, especially if it's an internal revenue operations ops review. It gets moved around or pushed off because something else comes up. There'll be three different ways that you share metrics, and people are confused. What is this one weekly? That one's quarterly. Which one are we doing now? It's just kind of the day in, day out way of managing a business. And I had the opportunity in my last company to actually build out, and I did started in Excel, and I put probably 50 to 70 rows in of our operating cadence. It was everything from employee surveys that went out and us addressing the employee surveys, to the onboarding trainings that need to go out, to the operational reviews, the forecast cadences, the pipeline cadences, deal review cadences. Everything was on there. And I was able to deliver that to the head of revenue operations and say, you know, I'll take some of these. You've got an EA who will take some of these. You need to take some of these. You know, other people will take some of these. And we calendared it and we built it out in a way where the business runs itself, whether or not the operator is there. It could be a new person that can come in and take over. I don't see that level of rigor. We push it with our sales teams. We don't do it internally. And so we find ourselves sometimes not accomplishing, not having the clarity of roles and responsibilities, spinning up teams on doing analytics reviews that we actually didn't schedule. It's not going to happen. How many times have you built a deck that wasn't reviewed and that the meeting was pushed off or canceled, and the productivity that's lost? So it's basically just doing what we do for our sales teams when we put a sales process together, looking internally at RevOps and building that for ourselves.
It's really like business operations. And I think RevOps naturally has to help push that rhythm internally, even if it's not in your quote unquote job description. It's how things become more efficient. And at the end of the day, our calendars are filled up. You know, if you're customer facing, you've got customer meetings, prospect meetings, you've got your manager's meeting, your internal sales meetings, product wants to tell you stuff. And then you've got RevOps and revenue enablement people like, oh, we got to train you on this. We have this new system thing, or you got to use this tool. So they're constantly inundated. So I can see a lot of value in creating this idea of a management operating system.
Yes, the way you said that made me think of one thing we were able to do with that MOS once we'd put it together in Excel and actually saw it all in one place. We saw that we had three different analytics reviews across the team that were slightly different, but a lot of the same metrics would show up in those three different reviews. So we were able to consolidate that down to one analytics review on a little bit lengthier cadence than the weekly. I think we went to biweekly or even monthly on that. And it worked. And there were other ways that we could, you know, keep an eye on the metrics ad hoc as needed, but we only needed that one review. So you can actually rationalize your calendar. And, you know, us as a leadership team, we came together and say, what can we strike off? We're hearing from our team that they're overworked. They have all the things you mentioned with the, you know, the sales calendars and the leadership meetings that they're attending with the sales leaders. How can we give them some time back? And that was one way. Once we visualized it all in one place, we were able to give them some time back and really rationalize what we were asking our own internal teams to do.
And that's how you get a seat at the strategic table, right? So you creating this idea and having the skills and really willpower to collaborate with all these leaders and pull it together is huge. And nobody sitting at the C-suite is going to tell you that's ridiculous, because if you're just showing them like, look, we just had three meetings with a different subset of people on a weekly basis, reviewing basically the same metrics. We consolidated that to one meeting. So like, if you just start doing the math on the amount of hours, just in that one efficiency gain, what can they be doing with that? That's revenue operations, right? Because you're driving revenue, increasing productivity, shortening deal cycle, which ultimately is freeing people up so they can like talk to customers.
Yeah, I mean, that is the best way to put it that I can think of. When you make it real in terms of productivity and time back and outcomes that the company can actually gain from giving that time back, not just internally with your own RevOps team, but going back to the CRM conversation, how do you pitch a big CRM overhaul? It's in sharing those productivity gains that you're going to give back to your sales team in speeding up the sales cycle. How much is that worth to your organization? Think about, you know, a lot of times you can tie dollars to the length of your sales cycle time, and you're giving them a week back because you, or much longer if you're going from 300 plus fields down to 60. That is real revenue that the company will be able to bring in because you've taken some of that inefficiency out. Same thing internally with revenue operations, but anytime you can point that out to leadership, say, here's the time back, here's that impact on the team and what you can expect to get from an outcome standpoint, aligned to your strategic goals that you're trying to accomplish, that's when you're going to get the buy-in from the C-suite to go ahead.
For sure. For sure. How do you, maybe tell me a little bit about how you go to another leader, maybe another director or VP, and convince them to either get rid of a tool, change a tool, combine a tool, or something like that. Because I can tell just by your face that you probably have some sort of story, but it's just not easy. Like my experience has been, you run into a lot of characters and personalities, and people get emotionally attached to their tools and process. So I don't know if you have something you want to share, a story or something.
Yeah, it's so important to understand your stakeholders. I'm kind of a classically trained program manager from way back. And a stakeholder analysis is something that we don't sometimes give the time and attention that it really needs. And I think what you'll find typically there are detractors. There are people that built that system that you're coming in and trying to say it's got these issues. And identifying those people is really important. I'm a relationship person. I think relationships are important. So ensuring that they can trust me as a person is, I think, really critical to being able to get any of these big projects through ultimately. But then understanding who else is seeing issues and concerns and building a consortium of people that can, you know, understand the benefit and the value of what you're trying to do. I was in one workshop I was driving it as part of a transformation project in my last company, and the person who had built our CPQ tool was in the room, and we were talking about all the issues with the CPQ tool. And it was really interesting, you know, initially at the outset of the call, there was a defensive wall and he was sitting there. Even his posture told us that he was, you know, ready to just fight back and say, well, this is why I did this. This is why I did that. And really justify. And what happened was people were aware of that and sensitive to it. But when we objectively had gone through the gaps of the tool and what it was causing for us internally, his tone changed. And there was almost a time in the meeting where we saw his tone change. And it was this recognition of that was built at a time when that made sense. And let's appreciate that. And let's give that its moment. And it got us to where we are. Now we need to get somewhere else. And that's not a bad thing. We need to celebrate what got us here, but also recognize the gaps in where we want to go versus where we are today, and have that person see that and say, now I get to build version two. I can be a big part of that. In that specific instance, it was really fun. And many of us noticed this person and kind of the change that they made. And it doesn't always work out quite that well, but that's typically my approach.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because you do things in the moment at the time that makes sense to everybody involved. It's not like somebody just willy-nilly goes out and gets a CPQ, because that's a massive undertaking that starts to give me heart palpitations even thinking about putting in a CPQ. But that is a really great way to approach it, right? And knowing that, especially coming into a new role, like I've been in the situation where you come in, especially a company that may not have had RevOps, and it's like, okay, now you come in, you own all the tools, and all these other people are still there that previously owned them. And you're secretly going, oh my God, this stuff is so screwed up. Like, what do I do? But, you know, you got to give them an A for effort sometimes. And, you know, I've been in those situations, and it's tough, because they, you know, people might feel like they're losing something, right? It's their job. And then you're coming in and going, well, I'm going to take a different approach, because like, I'm thinking about this situation in a prior role with an enablement tool. It was set up really well. Like there was nothing wrong with the way it was set up. It was great, but nobody was using it. And it's because it did not fundamentally integrate with our CRM, which is fundamentally not going to work for an enablement tool.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't something on their roadmap, and this company was a great company if you had a different CRM. And it just really went down to, like, when the selection process happened, there wasn't RevOps. So some of these bigger picture things weren't thought of, and it wasn't, you know, good or bad, but it needed to change. Contracts come up, and it's like, well, you know, we got to kind of get over our egos and just move forward for the greater good. Like, it's not, hey, it's not on you or your team or what happened. It's set up very well, but it's just not going to be successful because of where we are. So
I think
it's, yeah, it's hard. So it's tough. And like that human element is so important, you know, and I love the way you approach that.
Yeah. I have seen an instance where the person wasn't able to overcome, kind of the legacy thinking and the legacy implementation of our CRM. It was a situation where we'd actually brought this person back into the company after they had left, because we knew that they had built the first version, and we brought them in under the pretense that, you know, you'll help us build V2. And that was an interesting one. It was, you know, we were obviously very respectful of the person and what they had brought in, but ultimately realized that that person was, you know, some people have a skill set more tailored to small business and thinking scrappy and getting things done. And I've seen this in my own career where, you know, sometimes I've got a lot of big companies on my resume. And if I talk to a smaller company, sometimes they wonder, can you think like a small company, or are you just, you know, big person, big company thinker? And so sometimes that stigma comes along when it shouldn't. And sometimes, you know, you really are better off in a smaller company. And that person went back to a smaller company and is finding success there. So yeah, there are times when you need to recognize if the people in the seat aren't the right people to help you with that, then see if there's something else that they can do, preferably at the company. We always try to do that. But also, you know, if not on that project at your company, they'll find a you know, better project to a company, I think, that suits them better in the long run.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just really understanding, like you said, their stakeholder, it's just like a sales process, right? You teach sales and how to talk to different stakeholders in a company. It's like, just apply it internally. Talk to, understand what they're about. Like, what do they care about? Their kids, or is this thing they built their pride and joy? Then you have to like be really sensitive to that. And maybe it is time for a change, and you know, not everything works out perfectly, but you got to move forward. And I just love your approach. I think we could talk for hours and hours and hours. I think, you know, for me, one of the big takeaways is that having this operating model, this operating system is really something that RevOps can drive and own, even though it may not be in your quote title. It's really part of operating, and ultimately it impacts the customer and time and efficiencies and things like that. And this idea of the Parthenon model is super cool. I love that. And having the CRM be the foundation. So I think you've dropped like a really, like a lot of great insightful bombs on this podcast today. So what can you wrap up with? Maybe some words of wisdom, something you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, you touched on something that I had also just jotted down as a note coming into this podcast that I wanted to hit on. And it is, regardless of your position in the company, everyone can embody it's really a mindset. RevOps is more of a mindset and a philosophy than it is a formal structure in a company. And I say that coming from, you know, multiple large companies with very different revenue operation structures. Sometimes they didn't even call it revenue operations, even though that's what they were trying to build, was this connected system. It doesn't matter what role you're in, you can bring that to the table. And that philosophy, if I were to kind of put a couple words around that philosophy, it's connectedness. It's building connections with people across different teams and breaking down those silos that are often found in companies. You can do that regardless of the role that you're in. Find your counterpart. If you're in sales operations, find your counterpart in marketing operations that feeds you information or leads or campaigns or whatever it is. Find that person and start a relationship and a conversation with them and start to help each other out and share information. Same thing on the customer success side. Go find somebody. When I was in a renewals role, and we were having a big churn problem, and the only thing we had to do to fix that was start a conversation with the customer success team and start having them bring to us their red accounts on the customer success side. We immediately turned the churn rate up over 10% by starting that conversation. So even though I wasn't the head of revenue operations in that role, there was a people problem and getting us to talk. And then a process, we built a process. So it's the data, the tech, the people, and the process. Think over those four different areas. How can you connect to the business better and surround the customer with information and make that customer journey smoother and better, because we are better connected on the back end?
What a great way to wrap it up. I really appreciate you. I appreciate you sharing all of this wisdom with us, and I hope to see you soon out there on the RevOps campaign trail. So I think it'll be fun. Thank you so much for joining today, Tyler.
Thanks for having
and
me.
I wish you the best in your latest role. So super exciting.
Thank you so much. Look forward to keeping in touch.
Sounds great. This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.